Hi, this is John Costa. I'm with Rob Brotson today, and we're on Jubilee Square for the Old Town Festival Roman edition. It's looking really good now, lots of people about. It's getting nice and busy. What's the time? It's 11:15 in the morning. The portico's in front of us, lots of cardboard and tape everywhere. It's all starting to come to shape. Actually, it looks quite good. It's starting to come to shape. It's actually quite scary about how big it's going to be. And lots of Romans wandering around, lots of people in costumes. And we're just going to head off and see if we can interview the event manager, Jim Butler. So I've managed to track him down. Lots of people talking to him. The most exhausted man on Jubilee Square today. It's the event manager, Jim Butler. Jim, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Good. So how's it going? It looks fantastic.
It's going amazing, isn't it? You plan these things, you know what it's like, and you sort of think, you know, I hope people will come, I hope whatever. But literally, since we opened the gates, families and all sorts of just Leicester people have just emerged, and they are fascinated and they're engaging with every aspect, with, you know, the museums and the archaeological aspects, but also the living history. I've seen children trying to kill their parents at the children's army school, and the smells coming in from the cookery and the incense from the Mithraeum, and then we've got the authors who are just bringing a whole another level as well, and it's all you could hope for. It's kind of everything in my head that I was hoping for, and then some. So I'm really, really chuffed.
And that's the difference, really, isn't it? It's being able to speak to someone like yourself who's, you know, it's not just about event managing it on the day and making sure all the things that arrive on time and everybody's here and there's no spaces and it's nice and safe and health and safety and stuff, but actually with a vision for how this thing can go, it can get very easily down the road of which just like it looks like a series of stalls and it doesn't look as if it's connected, whereas in fact what you've got here is it actually looks like it could be like a Roman camp, like that tent over there with the standard and stuff like that and how the people are. There's almost a natural feel to it. It feels real, and that must be one of the challenges that you were trying to overcome.
Yeah. I mean, you want it. It's hard to create an immersive experience, which is, you know, which you want people to have, which doesn't feel tacky or it doesn't feel, you know, and we've got these reenactors are amazing. You know, they're so passionate and they're so authentic in what they do that, like you say, yeah, it could be, we could be in the Roman Forum from 2000 years
ago. Of course, and exactly where we're standing is actually what a perfect place to have it.
Yeah, and that was all part of that vision. It was like, if we're going to do this, we need to do it in the most appropriate place. This was the Roman Forum. People don't get that. So if, you know, if just one person leaves today thinking, I never knew that was where the Roman Forum was, fantastic. And, you know, this has been literally the heart of Leicester for 2,000 years. You know, a lot of people think of it as the clock tower, but, you know, that's only 150-odd years old. And before that, you know, the High Cross, this part of Leicester, was the heart of the, you know, Roman medieval, you know, up until the 18th century sort of town. And so to bring people of Leicester, you know, to congregate back here again and explore their rich past is all just amazing.
Now, as someone who specialises in hidden histories, cheap plug there for you. Did you see what I did there?
Like,
segue
straight
into that. With lots of different things, like, you know, Siege of Leicester that you're working on this year as well, and some of the other bits and pieces that you do. It's interesting to note that, you know, I was talking to this Roman reenactor over here and he was telling me about, you know, their way that they used to make sure that, you know, they sent their soldiers to the other side of the empire so you weren't going home. And that's why Leicester and also the UK has had so many, he was saying about Syrian people from Syria that were Roman auxiliaries that were here. Leicester's always been the centre of people coming and growing because it was the crossroads of Roman Britain, wasn't it?
Effectively, yeah, definitely. You know, there's something about Leicester, it is geographically the heart of the country and therefore has almost become this spiritual heart of the country. And, you know, at one point it was a frontier for the Roman period, but then, you know, actually the original sort of Iron Age settlers of Leicester didn't fight the invasion, and they welcomed the Romans in, and I'm sure there was tensions initially, but that effectively,
well, it's like a trading point of view.
Quite possibly. There was obviously some sort of exchange of something, whether it was goods or whether it was just, you know, we need to make this work because actually you are a much more powerful force. But because they didn't put up that resistance, actually Leicester then becomes this civitas capital, becomes the regional administrative heart for the whole of the East Midlands, for the Roman Empire. and that brought more trading and more commerce, and it and that sort of, I like to sort of think that's almost the foundations of Leicester's sort of growing, just welcoming nature, and we still do it 2,000 years later.
So what's your ultimate aim of putting on an event like this? I'm sure you don't need to be busy. Knowing you the way that I do, you don't need to be busy. So what was the vision behind doing it? Was it tying in with, you know, the fantastic opening of the new Jewellery Wall Museum? Was it you just felt that there was a need for it? Is it a sort of a date thing, or is it just something you've always been interested in, and the opportunity presented itself to do something this scale? I mean, you know, not just something small. I mean, this is a major undertaking.
I think, well, you know me, anything that I can do to promote and raise awareness of Leicester's really rich and diverse history, I'm on it. And the museums approached me when, you know, we thought Jewellery Wall was going to reopen, and said they'd see me do things in other towns, in York and things, you know, in a Roman festival type thing. And they were like, we'd like to do market something similar. Could you do something? And I was like, you know, obviously I'd love to do something. But how can we make it as impactful as possible? How can we really get this and make it something about the heart of Leicester, as opposed to something that's just sort of like feels a tack on event just because we can? And I hope that we've accomplished that.
Yeah, because I mean, it would be easy to just do it at Riverside,
yes,
or tack it onto an open streets, or tack it onto something else. Whereas actually, this feels as if it's about this, and I must admit, I must compliment you on the branding, because I think the branding is absolutely fantastic.
I mean, I wish I could take complete credit for the branding. That's linked into
it's our recording, mate. You can take ownership of it if you want.
Excellent. I mean, I spent a lot of time over those over the images and the flies that appear to be going around his head, it is important though. Actually, it is, you know, joking aside, it is clearly part of that sort of broader strategic approach by Leicester City Council, you know, to have this old town festival, and you know, it's taking it, you know, it wants this to be part of they have more of a legacy and be part of something that actually, okay, next year probably won't be Romans, but actually it's them sort of committing, saying, you know, this old town brand is going to be something that you're going to see time and time again, and it's going to be about showcasing our heritage in its, you know, its numerous diverse sort of aspects.
Well, congratulations, mate. I think you've definitely raised the bar on what comes next, so well done.
Well, thank you very much. I just hope they don't ask me to try and make it even higher.
Okay, can I get you to introduce yourself?
I am Anna, or Boudica for the day, and this is Humphrey the Head. He was the last person that complained about something to me.
I love that. Yeah, feedback even then, wasn't it? Like, it was a social media thing, and he just took his head off.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. We don't mess around.
So how long have you been doing this kind of reenactment and performance as Boudica?
Well, we work for a company called Up and Atom History. So we do everything from the Stone Age through to the space race. So, and I think even a bit later sometimes. So we go into schools and do events and things like that. So yeah, it's really good. We get to time hop all over the place.
So Up and Atom, is that Jed?
It is.
Jed Jaggard, yeah.
Yes,
so Jed's done stuff for me before at Military History Live events, and has come at various things, and he does RAF reenactment, and I've actually visited his underground
bunker.
Yeah, a really big day that he did a couple of years ago when it was open. So cool. And what's your name, sir?
My name's Ralph, and I'm here today portraying a Roman soldier of about the 1st century AD. And we're running Roman Warrior School for all the kids here, training them up to be vicious and bloodthirsty fighters.
Okay, now I have it on very good authority that earlier you had some children terrifying the life out of their parents. Do you find that young people really kind of get into it?
Absolutely, although I would say it's the parents who are more aggressive, especially the mothers. The chance to get back at their children with foam weapons always seems to be popular.
Now, a lot of people will know about Leicester being, you know, the centre of Roman Britain. We've got Jewellery Wall, we're all waiting to open, lots of a whole generation of kids that have gone through there and visiting and stuff, and it's nice to look at some of the boards that we have around heritage panels, because it really makes you realise just how big Leicester was back there, or Rattay as it was called. What kind of research do you do for your reenactment?
Well, as Anna said earlier, we do all kinds of things, all the way from Stone Age up to the Cold War and the Space Race. So for each event, we like to go away. We like to, you know, make sure that our our costumes, our uniforms are as accurately as accurate as possible. And the kind of whole ethos of Up and Atom History is education, but having fun while doing it. Yes, the children are fighting. Yes, they're hitting each other. But also, we're using Latin commands. We are teaching them to fight as the Romans would have done. So it's a history lesson, but brought to life.
Now, the costume that you're wearing now, both of you, I mean, I'm assuming it's historically accurate, but how much does it cost you to be able to create something? I mean, your helmet doesn't look flimsy. It looks real, as well as, you know, the items that you're wearing. And maybe you could draw your sword for us just so we kind of get a look for that. I mean, you know, it actually looks terrifying as well. I mean, do you put a great deal of effort into the accuracy as well when it comes to the young people, not just the facts, but actually how things look?
Oh, absolutely. We like to think that we do a good job of portraying history as it would have been. I think anyone who does reenactment will admit that they spend far too much of their time and their money researching and buying authentic garments, armour, weaponry, all to bring it to life. And it really adds something when the children can try on a helmet and feel the weight of it. They can swing an actual sword and get an idea of what it would have been like.
Describe to me what it would be like to be a Roman soldier here 2,000 years ago in Rate.
Probably quite dull, really. I think a common misconception is the Romans spend their entire time fighting and slaughtering. In reality, life as a Roman soldier was quite mundane. You were a workman, you were a servant to the other people, you'd be building things, you'd be marching. They were expected to march ridiculous lengths of every day. Same as modern soldiers, really. It's, you know, it's, what's the phrase, hours of boredom punctuated by moments of sheer terror.
So people would have joined the Roman army. Yeah, there we go. There's a Freudian slip for you in 2025, isn't there? Joined the Roman legion, made their way to really one of the outposts, Leicester, Rate, or England would have been one of the outposts, really, the furthest of the empire. And so when they're here, how long roughly would they have been in service?
Well, that really depends. If you're a Roman soldier, you could sign up for a particular length of time. But we know from, archaeological evidence and, DNA findings that an awful lot of the soldiers stationed over here, the auxiliaries who had been recruited from the empire, were from the other side of the empire, places like Syria. And we think the Romans had this policy of sending their auxiliaries as far away from home as possible.
So you can't get home.
So you can't get home, and you have no personal connection to the conflict. So there are people in modern-day Newcastle who can trace their ancestry right back to Syrian soldiers guarding Hadrian's Wall, during the Roman period.
That's fascinating, isn't it? I think that, for me, is the thing that really opens your eyes to British history, or maybe challenges some of the people's England for the English. You know, when you suddenly realise that we are some of the parts of everybody that's been here before. What's the decision from yourself of being Boudica? Is it because she's a famous female warrior, and it gives you an opportunity to play someone rather than just, you know, a peasant laying around doing chores?
Yeah, it's the person that everyone recognises. Every school child gets taught about Boudica, and it's, you don't get many women in history who are that dynamic. I know it didn't work out for her in the end, but she managed to sack the biggest Roman cities in the country before she was outmaneuvered. Unfortunately, the Celts do not do well in pitch battle. They just fell to the Roman formations, really.
Now, having been studying history and all those kind of things, being interested in that subject, is she someone that gets a fair crack at a whip when it comes to history, or is there a lot of it myth and legend and stuff like that? Is there more about Boudica that we don't really know beyond who she was and that she rode chariots and that kind of stuff?
Yeah, well, you've got the whole thing of the blades on the wheels of the chariot, which I don't think there's any evidence for at all, but it looks cool.
It does
look cool. And she seems to have been buried in lots of different places, because I was in North Wales the other day, and I was told that there's a myth that she was buried around that area, and obviously there's one about her being buried in London underneath, it's King's Cross Station, isn't it? And so no one really knows what happens to her. and
there's,
that's...
There's even debate on how her name is supposed to be pronounced.
Yeah,
pronounced.
Yes.
Well, I would say Boadicea, yeah.
Yeah, so no one really knows. And that's the romanised version of it. So she may have had a British name that was different again, because we were only getting it from the Roman side. So that all adds to the mystery. People like a bit of controversy and mystery and things like that.
Well, I think that the Roman period as well is far enough away, isn't it, 2,000 years, for it almost to be, you know, whatever evidence we find, we tend to dig up, or, you know, first-hand accounts and stuff like that. So tell me one thing about a Roman soldier that really surprises you, that probably would surprise someone that doesn't know anything.
Oh, that's a good question. You put me on the spot. What can I think of there? You read the accounts of what the Roman army did, how the Roman army moved, how they fought, and when you're wearing the kit and you're wearing the helmet and the chainmail and the armor and carrying all this equipment, and you think, how on earth did they keep going? How on earth did they did it? And a lot of it came down to the discipline, following orders.
They must have been incredibly strong people, because the kit, it's not just the weapons and the shield and the armour and helmets, and then you've got all your camping equipment and everything else, and you've then got to march 20 odd miles and then build a camp. Because before they actually had the bases here, they had to bed in because they were in enemy territory. So
make your camp or you're exposed.
Yeah. One good one I've just thought of, it's to do with gladiators. We've been telling a lot of kids this today. Gladiators, you know, you think of the movie, you think Russell Crowe, six-pack. Probably not the case. We think most gladiators were probably a bit podgy. Because if you've got a six-pack and someone stabs you, that's going to hurt. If you've got a bit of a beer gut and someone slashes that, you're going to be just fine. So most gladiators were probably a bit podgy, actually.
That has actually completely changed my view of everything. The one I always think of is with the helmet is the cut under the chin where, like, the strap... is one of those things that I've seen in movies before. It was always like it was under the chin where the helmet would rub. Listen, thanks very much for taking the time to talk to us. Have a good day today.
You too. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. Have a good day.
So I've managed to catch up with Raksha. Raksha, how are you? You having a good day?
Yeah, I'm having a great day. It's you know, every day is different for me, and I'm dressed in a Roman Empress's outfit.
Totally unexpected.
Well, is it for me? Not really, because I dress up all the time on TV, so, you know, it's like another day for me.
So come and tell us a little bit about, how did you get into doing what you do? Because a lot of people will recognise you, like you said, from television and stuff. So how do you stumble into that? Is it personality? Is it interested in the subject? Is it, I want to be on television? I mean, what's your own personal journey to doing these things?
I suppose I'm quite different in a way, because I always had a love for history. It started off as, like all children, love for dinosaurs, like absolutely taken with seeing a dinosaur book, and then wanting to learn more about history, and then a general love for history. But then I also loved doing theatre work as well, strangely. So when
I can see the segue there, so that's good. Yeah,
and instead of actually going to drama school, because I did audition for drama school, I also just did my A-levels and wanted to study archaeology. And my mum, you know, being as mums are, she was like, oh, you should just, like, go and get your degree. That will be a good thing to do. Go and get your degree. So that's what I did. I did archaeology. And then after I graduated, I excavated predominantly in London for about a couple of years. And then I got asked to come and go on a time team, and then it's just gone on from there. So I was on time team for 10 years, and now I make my own shows, and yeah, so it's just kind of gone on from there, and it's just got larger and larger, and now I'm the president of the Council for British Archaeology. I don't know how that happened, but yeah, so I've just been doing lots of work for, like, almost, well, it's like 30 years now in predominantly in archaeology. Yeah.
Well, that's fantastic to hear, because what you're talking about there really is being a young, enthusiastic, you know, child, you know, interested in that kind of stuff. Now, I've just spoken to Professor Sarah Scott from the Heritage Hub, and I've just, you know, interviewed Jim Butler, who's, you know, an amazing person here in Leicester when it comes to organising events and stuff, you know, a real vision from the paper, from a piece of paper to what you see today. And they're all talking about young people being inspired, and really what we're looking at there is little mini yous all digging around in all of that stuff there and stuff, isn't it? That, and so this would have been something that you would have naturally been drawn to and your mum would have taken you to because you were interested in history.
Yeah, and that's why things like this are great, because they are bringing the community to heritage and history in your local area, but also encouraging children and young people to actually get involved. When I was growing up, there was none of that. It was very difficult to actually find an outlet for that, unless I like religiously used to go to my local museum almost every weekend or get a book out from the library. But you can actually do hands-on, having a go at being an archaeologist, and you know, we've got a Roman legion over there, for goodness sake.
They actually look quite scary, don't they?
They really do, and I have to march with them in a minute, and trepidation I think is the word. I think they're my protectors, I suppose, because I'm the Empress, so I should just go with that, shouldn't I?
Yeah. Right, okay, so last question. I'll need to let you go. I'm sure you're very busy. Social media, you know, it's easy to think about all the negatives and stuff like that. You know, as a young person who didn't have social media, now there's so much more online that you can find. How do you bring that into, like you said, you know, for 30 years you've been doing this, you've been on television, and then make your own production. How important is social media to you, engaging that audience to actually see you or come and meet you like today?
Oh, like massively. And it's really lovely, actually, because you can have really lovely conversations with people that you will never meet. And they might live in New Zealand or Canada or wherever, or in the UK. And you have that kind of instant connection with people. But also just talking about what you're doing and your work. And I'm very privileged because I get to go to some of the most amazing archaeological sites in the world. And it's great to kind of share that with people and go, okay, I'm here and I can take you into Tutankhamun's tomb. I'm here, I'm going to show you all the things. And they feel like as though that they're with me.
Well, listen, thank you so much for talking to me, but also thank you for coming to our city.
Well, it's a pleasure.
So can I get you to introduce yourself, please?
Hi, I'm Sarah Scott. I'm Professor of Archaeology at the University of Leicester.
So Sarah, in your very nice green hoodie, Heritage Hub, fully branded, that's good, nice to see it. How long has that been out?
This is the first time it's been worn.
It's first outing.
It's first outing, yeah.
So what are you guys doing here today? Lots of activity here with excavation and stuff going on?
Yes, so we're having a brilliant time. I'm with colleagues from University of Leicester Archaeological Services and students. From museum studies, archaeology and ancient history, and lots of departments in the university. We've got a dig pit, so you can see lots of children looking for all kinds of things. We've got pottery, coins, fossils, so that's a very popular activity. We've also got our pop-up lab, so we've got some little handheld microscopes, lots of things for people to look at. We've got our Roman food stall. We've got our cesspit activity, so you can have a look at medieval poo, and all sorts of things that you would find in a cesspit. And lots of other things to handle as well.
So these kind of opportunities for you to go out and engage with the public about things they're interested in, obviously the Roman edition of the Old Town Festival is great, but actually what you guys actually do, because some of these little ones are here, you know, there's no reason why they couldn't actually study any of this stuff when they get older. And we've kind of forget that, don't we, about universities, about the opportunity to go out and actually, you've got school programs, but actually go out and recruit people because it's fun.
Yeah, and I think it's brilliant for us because you can hear the children are chatting away and they ask some fantastic questions, and it really makes us think about what we're doing and why we're doing it. And yeah, it's just a brilliant opportunity to be out and about here and talking to people.
So tell us a little bit about the Heritage Hub and how it's gone. You've had time to recover from the last event now.
So it's really great fun, actually, and it's a real privilege to be able to work with lots of organisations. So we work very closely with Leicester City Council, the museums team, for example. To be able to pop up across the city, it's really about making our research and the university's expertise as accessible as possible, but also supporting organisations to do the things that they want to do and working out how we can really support them. And this is a really good example here today where we're able to come and, you know, join with lots of organisations and just get really hands-on and get stuck in. It's fantastic.
Now I'm going to ask you a question now. I'm not going to put you on the spot, but, you know, the University of Leicester is known for, like, you know, Richard III and DNA and all that sort of stuff, and that kind of dominated everything for a long time, and then the reinterment and stuff like that. Does that create a whole set of challenges for you moving forward? Because then it's not, I'm not saying that you need to then find Richard the Fourth or Richard the Third horse, but is that kind of constantly keeping yourself in the public eye, particularly locally, about, you know, it's not just about that, there's so much more that you guys do. Are these events all part of that, trying to keep people knowing that you're still doing these things, you've still got those services and stuff?
Yeah, and I think it's great for us because it really makes us think about how we can make our research and the things that we do accessible and engaging. And you can see we've got lots of students here today, so it's great for them as well to be able to communicate their passion for their subjects and to get really hands-on. So it's that, you know, that for us is a really, really important thing. You know, that we really value these opportunities, and the students and staff really value the opportunities to come and talk to people about the things that they're passionate about. But I think it's also really important that we understand, you know, what it is that people are interested in. And, you know, that is obviously important for us in terms of shaping our events and programmes going forward.
Now, when we look at my final question, then I'll let you go, yeah. Well, I've got you on the ropes, you know. I mean, Leicester's been here for like 2,000 years, and there's a lot of history, and there's so much you can focus on, and so many like well-known periods in history, like Victorians and the Georgians and all these kind of things. But this is really where it all started, wasn't it? You know, Rattay came from this being at the centre of Roman Britain. All the roads met here and crossed. You could go from Lincoln down to Bath and stuff like that. Actually, it shapes Leicester how it is today.
Yeah, it's fantastic, and it's really fantastic to be here on right in what was the centre of Roman Leicester, and you can see in the background the cardboard construction that's, I think, going to, I'm not sure when that's happening, but I think this afternoon.
It's certainly taking shape. The portico is taking shape over there.
Taking shape, but yeah, I think there's something very powerful about being actually on you know, in the heart of the city, and thinking about what the city would have looked like in the Roman period, and then also fantastic that we now know the Jury War Museum is going to be open in July, and people will be able to come and discover what it was like to live in Leicester 2,000 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, a whole generation of young people at school going to visit them, a bit like the Egyptian thing at the New Walk Museum, isn't it? You know, coming to do the Romans, it's all part of that. And that it's only then that you suddenly realise that, you know, what you're actually at the centre of and what our city is actually all about and where it came from. It's nice to know those things.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And it's really a privilege to be involved with all of these projects and to be working with all of these organisations. And in soaking up the atmosphere.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's be brutally honest for us. That's the picture to die for, isn't it? All of those young people there, hands getting dirty, parents and stuff like that. I mean, that's really, really what it's about, isn't it? It must be quite nice for you to actually see that. It's almost like what you said, it's a privilege, but it's actually, that's one of the benefits of the job, isn't it? When you actually get out and people, and you realise they are actually interested in history.
Yeah, so you can see so many people are really, really interested and engaged. And it's really fantastic to see.
What was interesting, final thing, I was just over here, I was talking to a reenactors over here, Roman soldier, and I kind of said to him, I'll put you on the spot, tell me one thing about a Roman soldier that, you know, maybe we don't know. What was it like to be in Leicester 2,000 years ago? And he said that the Romans had a policy with their soldiers and auxiliaries that they would send you, if you were from one side of the empire, they'd send you completely to the other side, so there was no, like, you know, there was no leave or anything like that. And so he said there's evidence of, like, you know, people from Syria being, you know, Roman soldiers in the north up in Newcastle and things like that. And so really Leicester's always been one of those places where people came from all over the world. It's just exactly the same as it is now, isn't it?
It is. And if you come and have a look at the stall behind, you can discover some of the finds from the Vine Street house in Leicester, which tell that story that, you know, people were coming from all over the world in the Roman period. So yeah,
thank you very much.
It's a pleasure.
Tell us who you are and what you're doing here today.
My name is Aurelia Caller, and I am a Roman cook.
What does that involve?
It means I'm cooking for the soldiers. Today we've got spiced lentils, we've got honey mushrooms, we've got pea and ham pottage, and we've got chicken in a dipping sauce.
So what was the role and the focus of the kitchen and the cooking in Roman life. Are you focused on Romans in Britain?
Yes. It was important then as it is today. Heart of the home. What would happen when you had a fort? Somebody somewhere would set up what was called a papina, fast food shop, outside the fort, so they could have food like Mummy used to make.
Now, your colleague is desperately trying to get the flames to, I don't know what the word is, to grow. Is that the right word? How important was the maintenance of the hearth?
You would not let your fires go out because it takes so long to relight them. In fact, Ötzi, the iceman who was found in Italy, had a little pot with some moss in it and what had been burning coals so he could light a fire. But it was so difficult in the time because you didn't have matches, you're using flints, so you'd never let your fire go out.
And maintaining the hearth wasn't a heroic activity, was it? You weren't going out and fighting battles.
No.
How did women, was women's role central to that?
Women stayed at home. They weren't expected to fight. Women have always had much more sense than to go out and start fights with people. But we would stay at home, look after the house, look after the children. Some women, particularly in Italy, were business women. There's a very famous lady, Julia, from Pompeii, and she ran a very, very successful business. So we did have a little bit more freedom than people think.
Do you think the Romans found Britain different from what we now call Italy? You know,
Well, of course, not all Roman soldiers were from Rome. I mean, the centurion of this group was actually from Germany, and Germany's weather is very similar to Britain's. So I don't think the weather or, you know, the terrain would make much difference to them.
They were prepared for all eventualities.
They like to say so, yes.
Sinon, je fais deux petites sur les jonctions.
Tell us where we are, yeah. What you're doing, okay. And what your involvement is.
Okay. Hi, we're in Leicester. We are building a Roman temple of some kind out of really big cardboard boxes. So we've been, all week there's been sessions going on. So some families have done five days this week and then are back today on the 6th. But we're now working together to build what could be up to at least a 15 metre high sculpture out of cardboard boxes. Totally normal way to spend your Easter holidays.
And describe the process. So what's everybody doing?
So
what you're asking people to get on?
We built all the cardboard boxes and now we are sticking them all together with vast amounts of parcel tape to create parts of the building. So we're currently making the roof structure, which is going to be attached to other pieces, and then the whole thing will be lifted up in the air. So we've got, 20-odd families all working together, people from all over the city, building this on a mission, I guess.
Now, two questions I think people listening would want to know.
Yeah.
Is what you're going to do if it rains,
yeah,
which hopefully it's not, fingers crossed, and how'd you take it down at the end?
So, if it rains, I think we're just powering through. And there is a plan tomorrow to literally pull it down with ropes. So this is the artist is here with us today. Oliver, somebody, sorry, can't remember his name. But the artist is here with us today and this is done all over Europe. So he's done it in Budapest already this week, I think. And he's going somewhere else tomorrow. But so we build on the Saturday and then Sunday it literally gets pulled down and everyone stamps on it and apparently it's lots of fun. So
it,
yeah,
does sound it. Brilliant. Have a nice afternoon.
Thank you.
Just tell us your first name. And describe where we are.
Violet.
Okay. And whereabouts are we, Violet?
We're about near the Jubilee Square.
And what's going on?
We're building a Roman fortress to represent the Romans.
And what is the fortress going to, what do you think it's going to look like when it's built?
Very big.
How are you building it?
We're building it by taping all of the blocks together and stacking them onto each other.
And are you going to be like holding this up by yourself, or is it lots of other people involved as well?
Lots of other people will be involved.
And what do you think it'll tell you about how the Romans used to live?
It'll tell us how big they used to have their buildings and how it used to be, but it'll be more hollow inside than the outside.
Now, the question I want to know is, how are you going to take it down tomorrow? Are you going to come and help take it down tomorrow? What do you think that'll be like?
Fun.
What will you need to do to take it down, do you think?
We'll have to knock it over and then flatten the boxes back down.
No, not really. Well, I think we still need to flip this whole thing over as well on the other side.
Okay, right. So let's stick some nice
bits. I'm Jean-Marie. I'm working with Olivier Grostet, who's a French artist, who since more than 15 years now builds monumental cardboards all around the world. And only in the same way, no machines, no nothing, just human energy, a lot of human energy, and the sound of the tape.
And what's it like having all the kids involved, children involved?
Children involved? I don't
participate,
sorry.
Participating, taking part. What do the children benefit?
The children?
Yeah.
I don't know benefits for others. It's not my...
What's your benefit?
My benefit is to, I think, to continue to make that nobody forgets that art is important, poetry is important, and the most of all of that is that we always can do things all together if we decide. We can do some crazy things. So this is my, I don't remember. I don't have enough benefit. Words in benefits.
So what a fantastic event we've had today. I mean, it's only been going on for, an hour or an hour and a bit, something like that. And already it's packed with people. We've done some good conversations. I've really enjoyed having a look around. Certainly learnt a lot about Roman Leicester, Ratte, back in the day. I mean, this portico thing, Robin, it's fantastic with people like all the kids getting stuck into it.
Yeah, the way the kids are kind of just left to do it rather than being supervised doing it. I mean, there's supervised and help there for them, but they're not being told what they should do with everything. It's up to them to make it work, which is great.
Yeah, I think I was just talking to Jim Butler, who's the event manager for today, and I just said to him, you know, how does it compare to your original vision on a bit of paper to what it is now? And he was just saying, it was great. It's good to see it come to life. And I said to him also, what's really important is to make people realise just how long Leicester's been here, 2,000 years. I mean, we kind of focus on like the Victorians and the Georgians and we think about those kind of periods, but actually a lot of how Leicester is shaped and the event is actually here in the centre of Roman Leicester where the Forum was. It's kind of one of those things, it's good to remember, I think, isn't it?